Accession number 30279, Reel 5.
This is the third reel of a taped interview with Ross Bradbury in his home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 9th of the 10th, 2007, for the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. Ross, obviously you've been talking about sticking these mines on board ships, everyone sort of being a bit upset that you are being so successful. And you've spoken about the operation that had been aborted. Let's move on from there. How did your training progress from this point?
Yes, well, as the signal came through from Darwin that the operation of Starfish had been aborted, the advance party, there's obviously no point in our party staying at Garden Island. So immediately we were flown back to Melbourne, and during that period, obviously, arrangements have been made to for our party to move to the more active zone.
Where was the more active zone? Where were people seeing the problem?
Well, presently the you might say headquarters, apart from being in Australia and Melbourne, are also in at Brisbane, SRD headquarters with AIB, and our other headquarters were Moratai, and we found out that's where we're heading after we got Melbourne. We then re-equipped for an operation in the islands. Presently, of course, we didn't know exactly where. And
you were being briefed, but only limited.
Very limited. You really didn't know till you arrived in that particular zone what you were going to do, what they had planned for you. I think things were all pretty fluid at that time. And we flew out of Melbourne, we went to Brisbane. I think I mentioned something about Brisbane, didn't I? And then we took an aircraft again from to Townsville, and then on to right at the tip of Australia, Jackie Strip, and then across to New Guinea, to Moroki. I must admit, a rather foul place. And there we waited to get a DC-3 to fly us across the Owen Stanleys. Now, that's a bit of a job because they're not pressurised. So we had three goes to getting over the Owen Stanleys because of the cloud had come in, and so fortunately the pilot decided it wouldn't go on, he turned back. So anyway, we finally got across the Owen Stanleys and on to Moroki, to Moratai.
Before we go on, what was going through your mind, given the fact that you were now on your way, on your first trip out on operational duty? Now, this was the real thing.
Yeah, well, it was the real thing, but we're still sort of hadn't quite got to the real thing, and we were just waiting to, I suppose, to find out exactly. I mean, you could conjure up a lot of things in your mind, what you may be doing. From driving an SB underwater, and obviously we certainly weren't going to do that where we're heading. And
but how are you preparing yourselves amongst yourselves? You know, what's going to happen? To what degree were you concerned about going away?
Yeah. Well, it's hard to think back exactly what you're doing 60 or more years ago, but I guess when you've been in the services for some time, you just sort of go along with what's happening, and you don't sort of think up too many problems. And so, however, at any rate, at Moratai, we were then briefed that we were going to join the 9 Division only for the ride, and they were about to assemble a quite a large convoy at Moratai, and are going to attack a small island off the coast of Borneo, or it's the west side, Sarawak, an island called Labuan.
Did you feel confident that you were going to be able to fulfil your expected task?
Well,
given you didn't really know what it was.
Well, we knew we were only going for the ride, because there's no other. Obviously, it's the easiest way to get us to Labuan. And I must admit, sitting back and watching an invasion is quite an experience. And there was quite large couple of heavy cruisers, and there was this small island, and they were firing shells into this island. And I wouldn't have liked to have been on the other side of the receiving end. And this went on till they felt that they softened the island up enough to do a landing, and the normal sort of landing with the beach craft and things going in, landing craft. The SALT troops went in, and as I said, we were only passengers, so we waited our turn, you might say, and finally got ashore and established a camp in a designated area, and we set up a series of booby traps around us, and we just sat there and kept our head down. But unbeknownst, of course, I suppose there'd be about 1,000 Japanese soldiers, roughly. It may have been more, I don't know, but at any rate, they were all surrounded. And as I said, they've been shelled and what have you. But one night they broke out. I think very wasn't anticipated. And next thing, of course, there's Japanese running around shooting everyone, and they're shooting everyone, and we decided we'd better keep our heads right down till all was settled down, because it was not a good, people shooting each other. It's not too good.
When you were coming in and you could see the cruisers firing into the island, and you realised that you were actually in a war zone. This is what all the training had been about.
Yeah.
You were actually going to get in there. How did you feel? I mean, were you concerned that you know this might be the last island you ever see, for instance?
Yeah. Oh, not really. I'm fairly confident, I think. Yeah, but we weren't at the sharp end of this stage of the game, and our training was such that what we were doing, I think we were keeping us not in the actual active front line, you might say. So that would come later. And this finally, the Japanese that were still around were captured eventually, and everything settled down. And they wanted some intelligence, and they knew they get feedback, obviously, from the native population. And on the mainland, which was actually the coast of Sarawak, there was a place called Spitang, and there was a several Kempeitai, Japanese intelligence, and they wanted them snatched so they could interrogate them. So they got us organised, and there was a route. Where was he? Oldham, I think, John Oldham. And about five of us, we went on an army patrol boat. It was going to be a night crossing and go ashore and then scout around and find where these guys, with the help of the local natives. And we were just closing on the coast, and we could hear a PT boat, be a US PT patrol boat, and they had already given signals that we were going to go in this so-and-so type of patrol boat, and next thing there was this great searchlight flooded us. Immediately our signaller flashed a signal to them of our code. The light still stayed on, and Oldham said, "Look, just send him an usual message. Oz here, fuck off." The light went out. And we thought they might have blown our cover, because we weren't far offshore, but however, it was okay. We went, and then we spent a couple of days, and for some reason the Kempeitai weren't there. They'd gone somewhere, but at any rate, we got a signal, not a signal, but a message from the natives that they were heading back, so anyway, we captured them. Plus a couple of other characters that the natives reckon they were sort of Japanese collaborators, you might say. But I've still got this in my memory bank. Of course, you can imagine these natives were in very, very poor health. You know, they hadn't had any medical treatment for about 4 years nearly. And I sort of went into this little camp on, and this chappy came out, and he just had no nose. He'd been completely eaten away with yaws. And absolutely a dreadful sight to see someone with no nose, just a hollow. And so, you know, that was the state they were in. It was pathetic. Mm. Anyway, so we got these couple of characters and took them back to Labourne.
You're obviously being assisted by the native population to a certain degree. Let's talk about what was involved in capturing these chaps. Run it through with us, what actually happened?
Obviously we stayed low till they just came back to their camp on, where they had their little headquarters, you might say, and their communications. And fortunately the natives were friendly. We didn't have any problems with them, apart from the two that they'd already pointed out to us. And we just let them in, and then more or less, as they, you might say, walked into their office or so.
How did they react? What did you have to do to subdue them?
Well, of course, wouldn't imagine that they're going to find Australian soldiers sort of banging on their door or breaking it in. I don't think that I can't recall whether they grab a gun or not, but no, they didn't. I think they were felt that maybe they become prisoners of war. So there wasn't any action, there wasn't any shooting.
No. But obviously you experienced just recently this breakout by the Japanese.
Mm.
You heard gunfire, if not even seen Japanese running around, and thought it's time to get low. What was your experience on hearing that for the first time? The pandemonium associated with warfare.
Yeah.
How were you coping with that situation?
Yes, we'd in our training and prior to joining SRD, I'd had a fair bit of training with gunfire, and especially in the armoured regiment where we'd be firing tank weapons and things like that, so on ranges and things. So it wasn't untoward to hear things whistling overhead and what have you. As long as I went overhead, it was okay. So by this time, we looked back and we're just and then we were briefed to know what were our next move was, because we, as I said, didn't have anything to do with the invasion or landing at Labuan. The Catalinas arrived. It was this beautiful harbour at Labuan called Victoria Harbour. And then we were briefed to say we're off to the Rajang River to link up with the Smut Party.
All right, we could talk about that too. And I'm wanting to, if I can, get you to highlight the sort of experience that you had. Here you are preparing to capture the enemy and presumably sneaking up to their outpost and preparing to break in, all that sort of thing. I wondered whether you were able to sort of give us an idea of how that felt to be in this sort of scenario where here you are, you're going to come face to face any moment with the enemy, and behind that door could be a Gatling gun. You don't know.
Yeah.
Let's if you can, tell us about how you were coping with that situation.
Yes, well, it all happens pretty quickly, so I don't suppose you've got much time to really... obviously, when they came back and went into their you might call, huts, we were in the long grass, camouflage with when you're sort of lying in long grass, you got every creature crawling and what have you, and things flying around, insects and what have you, and it wouldn't be the most comfortable things to be just sort of sort of like a doggo in the jungle, I can tell you. But you get used to it, and when the action starts, it's much better. At least you know what you're up to then.
People talk of being in action. You know what you're doing.
Yeah.
It all happens automatically.
Yeah.
You've been trained to act on a situation without really thinking, and it's only afterwards that you have a time to sort of get all jittery and need a cigarette, that sort of thing. Was that an experience that you had after your first experience of contact?
Oh yes, well you always talk about it as a group, and I know as we came ashore, one of the lads got caught in a, you know, you've got a lot of, especially on the coast, you know, you're in mangoes, you're in, you get a lot of vines and things like that, and he hooked up, tripped, and he shouldn't have had it, but he did. He had his safety catch off. And next thing, there's a rip of about four or five bullets started. But fortunately, his own gun was pointing into the ground, so that's where they went instead of, you know, they could have gone anywhere, quite frankly. That would have been a disaster if anyone had been shot or wounded. Yeah. But those things happen, and very, very easily. Yeah.
But after the initial experience, the success of this capture, how did you feel?
Thinking back, it seemed to fit in the pattern of our training. We did it. We captured these two guys, two Japs that they wanted to interrogate, and so the job's done, and that's it. And as I said, you know, we all have a bit of a chat about it afterwards, and the generally your party leader just goes through things, and of course he certainly went through. Going through pretty dense jungle area with a safety catch-off, which is really a no-no. But
One of the things that I often get from people is that the biggest concern that they had before they went on an operation was whether they would actually keep their bottle together, whether they would let the team down, whether they would do their job as they had been trained. Was that something that you...
I think you're very mindful of that. Yeah, I think you are mindful that, and if you've absorbed your training and done everything well, you know, things come fairly automatic. And but as I just pointed out, this incident with the gun accidentally being fired, so that certainly wasn't in the training, but it was because he anticipated that he might have to quickly fire, so he took his safety catch off. Yeah, copped the mistake, as they say.
What sort of, obviously you're being prepared to act when the enemy was around. What sort of preparation were you given to cope with a scenario that you were not expecting? If, for instance, you were wounded, what would you do? If you weren't able to go on, what would you do? How are you being prepared in that regard?
Well, in our small parties, we had to rely on someone. If you're wounded and you found difficulty to walk or whatever, you'd have to then rely on what was available to assist you, and they would be natives. This is virtually, in our little parties, there would be no one else. We all had training in, you know, sort of first aid, and we carried a small first aid kit to, say, plug up a bullet wound or something, or stop the bleeding, but that was about it. So I must admit, we relied heavily on local support. to get us out to, and I think none of us really had any in mind that we're going to be need that assistance. Mm.
Presumably your mind doesn't want to think about that, but what were you being told if you were captured? What were you being told you must do if you were in that situation?
Oh, if you were captured, I think the old army, that you gave your name, rank and number, and that's it.
And if that wasn't good enough for the enemy to take, what next?
Well, you had to cop what they dished out, which wouldn't be too pleasant. Hmm. And,
in a special, small service, such as, you know, unit like yours, in a special service unit, presumably they knew that you would know too much. Hmm. Did you have precautions? There were people talking about having tablets that they would bite on if they were caught.
Oh, yes, they are. I can, reminds me, they did give us what they call L pills, or a pill that you're supposed to carry. I wouldn't have the faintest clue where mine finished up, but it was a small tablet that I think they used them in Europe. They were cyanide, so you bit them. Well, it'd be up to the person whether they wanted to commit suicide or cop what was going to be dished out. So,
I've been told by people that you were encouraged that no matter what, bite the bullet, as they say.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to cope with what was going to be dished out.
No, probably not. Probably not.
Here you are. You've been successful on your first operation. Yeah. What next? How did you feel about the success?
Well, we didn't have much time to sit around and talk about it, because the next thing we're the Catalinas arrived, and we're off to the Rajang River in Sarawak. So it was just a new operation opening up, and all brand new to us, of course, because we'd never been into this area before. And so when we landed on the Rajang River, right up the what they call the Ulu, the top end of the, we were met by the advance, or the party that had actually, they had dropped in to a place called Barrio, right up the top, and they'd walked down because it's divided into, Sarawak's divided in divisions. There's, one is the capital, Kuching, 2, 3, 4, 5. They walked down. The party leader was a fellow called Major Soshin. He was a Brit. And we arrived to reinforce their half a dozen or so. I don't quite know how many they had at that stage, but wasn't many. And this started us on the operation of Samut 3 to capture Japanese outposts, or garrisons, or whatever you call it. They were old trading towns, you might say, or along the river.
Let's talk about that. What did you know? What were you being told about the Simut operations? We hear of Simut 1, Simut 2, and you're in Simut 3. What did you know at the time? What have you learnt since about those operations?
Well, I think the actual object was, because they had so much problems with the Japanese when there was an invasion,